When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
Over the past several months, I've been actively engaging with professionals across the construction industry on LinkedIn. My focus, to emphasize the human element within our business and engage in thought-provoking conversations. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce my guest, whose career journey and experiences promise an enlightening discussion. Janine Trinidad, a seasoned professional, joined Procore Technologies in 2021. As a senior trainer in construction education, she plays a pivotal role in training internal staff and collaborating with industry partners. But let's rewind a bit. Janine's path began in the construction industry, where she accumulated over 20 years of facilitation experience, including more than a decade in construction management. Her roots trace back to a 100-year-old family-owned contracting company where she honed her skills and passion for the field. But Janine's story doesn't end there. She wears another hat, a certified transformational coach, with a special focus on women-centered and trauma-informed methods. Her journey into performance and wellness was born from personal experience, navigating burnout and stress while managing construction projects. Driven by a vision, she strives to transform the construction industry into a healthier, more successful, and welcoming environment for all. And she firmly believes that technology can be a powerful ally in achieving this transformation. Janine, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Was that you? Was that you I just talked about?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. And I love the fact that you started in construction. I love the fact that you're back in construction, taking all of your experiences, including your transformational coach experience, and coming back to the industry with a leading company in the industry as a technology company. So I just want to kind of hear more about your story and how it all kind of fits together. It certainly addresses my interest. You know that I mentioned in my first conversation with you that, you know, I have four pillars of things that I'm interested in. Love being one, inclusion being a second, social justice being a third, and then of course, leadership. And we could talk about all four of those based on your background. So my first question is, why did you start in construction? Say a little bit about that and then just kind of let's walk through your journey a bit.
Yeah, happy to. Well, I honestly, when I was young and straight out of college, I didn't really plan. Construction was never the plan. I thought I was going to go to law school. I also had this deep passion in performance and really at the time wanted to pursue that more. And so I was surprised myself that I was interviewing for an assistant role, an administrative role in a construction company. I definitely remember the day of the interview, kind of looking around and seeing these images of buildings and cranes and not really knowing if I was in the right place. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, right off the bat, I felt like a fish out of water. But then once I signed up and I started to learn more about the work and the great team building and the great opportunity also in the industry, I got hooked. I found myself walking around downtown San Francisco in the financial district and just soaking up my environment in a way that I hadn't before. Mm-hmm. And then also in a way that really fed the part of myself that loved that as a performer. So like, you know, my early days of being a dancer, it was all about space and creating space in this very ephemeral and embodied way. And I think I found that in construction, but I found that in a very personal way. I don't think I ever talked to any of my construction colleagues about that. They just kind of looked at me and said, oh, you have a show this weekend? Okay, have fun with that.
Exactly.
I'll see you Monday at 6 a.m., right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I got hooked and I stuck with it, started to kind of work up the project management route and really saw that there was a potential career for me, let go of my aspirations to go to law school. That I think was the initial drive and connection point. And again, I found that kind of passion for language and maybe negotiation or just the techniques of writing really great contracts. Like I found that in construction and I found it in action. So again, it was like all of these skills and these practices that intrigued me at a young age, I was continually surprised to find in construction. Because surely no one would have guided me towards that path. I have no one in my family who's an engineer or an architect or anything remotely related.
Okay. I can't remember the word, but your academic credential is a BS in...
in rhetoric.
Yeah. Rhetoric. Yes, yes. That's very interesting, but certainly very much about language and the use of language, I guess is the kind of, I would just say that's kind of the essence of it. Is that a fair way of saying it?
I'd say so. Yeah, that's perfect.
So you're very rhetorical, or at least by that degree. Again, you find yourself applying for a job as an assistant at a construction company, you know, with a degree in rhetoric.
Yeah.
And your journey, at least in terms of how I was able to capture from appropriate sources, your journey doesn't talk about certifications in this or training class in that, but I'm sure dotted throughout your journey, you've taken probably a variety of different kinds of training or educational kinds of programs to support what you were doing for the time you were in construction. Because then, and I'm kind of jumping ahead for a second, your story that deals around the whole notion of being a certified transformational coach, you got burned out in construction.
Yeah, and I actually was working in construction more on the owner construction manager side at the time that I was obtaining my coaching certificate. And I was also, you know, the coaching certificate was a natural progression from teaching dance and performance and teaching yoga. So again, more of these embodied practices and wanting to hold space for others with a training that was more on this verbal plane. I think I already had my sights on working remotely in my career and making some sort of shift in that way. But I was working in construction at the time and was able to create some work-life balance for myself, but oftentimes at the cost of maybe career development, because I sort of said, hey, I have all these other pursuits that I'm going to go do. So my commitment to construction is this much, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's definitely not like my windy path in the industry is definitely not one that I would recommend, so to speak. But I think it just speaks to like this natural affinity towards a lot of the core skills that the construction industry has to offer. But a few years prior to that, I absolutely did get burned out. So that was my first kind of run and stint in construction. I was sort of, you know, eager to quote unquote climb the ladder in that project management track and was on job sites every day and dealing with some of the challenges of being a young woman in construction on a job site, on a very active job site. And I didn't really have much guidance in how to self-coach, how to, you know, deal with the day-to-day stress personally. And I also didn't have my embodiment practice, my self-care practice really dialed in. You know, I hadn't practiced meditation and yoga at that time. And so, you know, when I, again, worked to obtain my coaching certificate, I had already gone through a few phases of figuring out that puzzle, how to balance my passion projects with my quote unquote day job in construction. And ultimately, just how to find my whole self and bring that to my work, which, you know, I'm able to do more so now.
Yeah, it's delightful just to hear you talk about it in that way. One of the things I say to folks when I talk about the whole process of developing oneself, you know, I criticize the construction industry for not doing a good enough job of developing the whole person, not just the tradesperson, not just the technical person, but the whole person, which means understand, you know, individuals who are self-aware, individuals who have a sense of how to bring about balance in their lives in ways that in the construction industry aren't on the tip of one's tongue. You talked about meditation. One of my good longstanding friends, in fact, he was one of my early conversation partners on my podcast, is a guy named Brent Darnell. And he's been working in the industry for a whole bunch of time in the area of practice associated with emotional intelligence. And one of the things that he uses in his trainings is he teaches these tough guys with chewing tobacco in their mouths and dirty boots and those kinds of things. He teaches them meditation, because he believes it's so important to create that space for oneself, and which is exactly what you're saying and what you did for yourself by going back to performance, learning some other things, getting your certification in coaching. You kind of retooled yourself to bring about the opportunity for better balance, is kind of the way I would interpret what you said. Certainly something that I hope that when I ask the question, it was important for you just in terms of your personal journey and in a career working. You had that 23-year period, and about 10 of those years was in construction, but you did other things, things that were more related to your early years passions. But you've now come back to construction, and you bring all that experience, good and bad, mostly good. How is that being drawn upon, utilized by Procore in the role that you're filling for them? So talk about what you're, how you got there and what you're doing with Procore, and we'll figure out other things to talk about as we go on.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I wanted to say is, you know, when you mentioned like the years that I've spent in each of these practices, but once you do something, you don't really lose that experience, right? So it's right. Always there playing in the background. Construction was always there playing in the background, even if I didn't go and work for a general contractor or a developer or what have you. Mm-hmm. And same thing with dance, yoga, all these other things that fed me as just simply an embodied person. Mm-hmm. That would occur when I was juggling both. You know, I would go to a job site, and what would invigorate me while I was doing the banal paperwork or what have you was to, you know, look at and see all the activity on the job site, listen to the superintendent and how they strategize the logistics on the job site, and saw how parallel that was to, you know, putting on and directing a production and figuring out the backstage elements or the choreography amongst all the dancers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So without me really knowing, I was actually always my whole self. But again, I was perhaps processing that quietly, trying to make sense of all of these seemingly disparate things. Mm-hmm. And so fast forwarding to coming to Procore, I also found myself in a place where I said, okay, I'm really enjoying all of my coaching and facilitation work that I've built on my own and doing that online. But I have all this construction experience that I know is not going to go away, and that still resonates and has stories, you know, for me to share, and again, opportunity for me to step into. How do I, what do I do? Here I am again at this sort of crossroads. And, you know, someone had planted the seed of Procore, and I had actually used the platform, you know, in one of my construction positions prior to that time. And I said, okay, this does seem like a really good fit, or we'll see if there's something there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there aren't always explicit training or facilitation positions open. So I had to wait a couple of months until one popped up. But once I read the description, I said, oh, wow, this is everything I wanted. This is like a dream job. I get to kind of be me, facilitate, you know, lead discussions, think inquisitively about these really interesting topics. I get to, you know, have the working environment that I've been slowly building for myself. And then I get to utilize my construction experience and not completely let that go. And I've, you know, continue on this path of just learning so much about construction, about a practice and a skill set and an industry that I surprised myself with, right? So, yeah, I felt like it was just a dream job. And the position to start was mainly internally focused. And now after 2 years, that's starting to open up in more collaboration with and within the marketing department. And is becoming more externally focused. So I often get to go to conferences, meet construction professionals who are, you know, still in the grind and also doing amazing work. Because Procore surely does have some amazing partners in the industry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So to say it in a simple way, you come at how you deliver, whether you call it training, consultation, coaching, you come at it from I'll say the human performance side as opposed to the construction side?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think it's within the kind of delivery method of transformational facilitation. You know, it's not something completely brand new that I was bringing to Procore. It was cool to show up at Procore and see how the coach approach was well established, all aspects of the business. So I felt like I was in good company. You know, it was, I felt like I can sit right in, learn, and also contribute and grow in the direction that I had always wanted for myself. And, you know, this is now a couple years ago, and it might still be true, but I'd say that the construction industry has a lot of training, does it really well for the field, maybe does it so well on the project management side. And it might depend on, you know, what segment or sector you're working in. But I surely came into the industry only having minimal training, really needing to pull myself up by the bootstraps. And sometimes that's great. There's some advantages to that. I did find some great teachers and mentors along the way, but it also wasn't easy. There's probably also some information that would have best been delivered with some, you know, coaching or some a better way of delivering it versus me kind of confused and wondering like if I'm doing something right, just directionless.
Yeah. So the modality that you're using is a coaching relationship as you work with people, or are you engaging with people in the format of a class, a cohort, seminar? How are you delivering?
This is a great question because I think on the onset, like at first glance, it's a very traditional delivery method, instructory-led trainings. So, you know, lecture-based, but also interactive. So, you know, at first glance, it's what you would expect. But here's where I think you might really enjoy what I'm about to say, because I know that you're all about soft skills. Within that format of a group training with a very clear instructor myself, right? There are some nuances to make it engaging and to also frame the material less didactic, where it's like, okay, here's some bullet points and facts and key terms. Now just go memorize them, right? That way of teaching works great, but it only really gets you to like level one or 200, one to two. To get you into those more intermediate advanced ways of understanding concepts, you have to move them towards application, and interaction is key in that because you're getting folks to think independently right off the bat. You're getting them to experiment and discover new ideas. And for me, that's a creative process, right? And I think that's where I love teaching in that way versus just creating, you know, fact-based knowledge checks along the way.
Right. So if you could describe it from the standpoint of, and maybe give me an example in terms of the content of your training.
Sure.
From a learning objective standpoint, what's the demonstrable knowledge, skill, or ability that comes out of the training that you deliver?
Sure. Yeah. Anything that's going to be able to drop the learner in a scenario-based environment and then apply their learnings, again, with independence. I think that's where we're getting into more of those higher levels of learning. And folks will often reserve that kind of content after they've expected the learner to prove first their competence in more of the didactic, fact-based, you know, knowledge check kind of world. And when you're delivering educational content, though, in a corporate setting, you don't have that time, right? You don't have, you want people to be able to apply their learnings right away and turn it into actual productive work results. So that's where I think it is challenging for corporate trainings to really tap into that, again, transformational and creative space. But it's possible. I think it's first understanding the basic elements of what transformational programming is, really mapping out that journey for the learner to go from point A to point B and defining the program objectives as such. And then it's, you know, again, in the skills of the facilitator to draw out that independence, to support them and build their confidence. I think, I hate to use the term old school, but it is a helpful framing also. And mm-hmm. I think some of the ways we look at learning in this quote unquote old school way is, here's again, you know, a list of terms, go memorize it, and then I'm going to check your competence through a test.
Mm-hmm.
And so another example would be like, I'm really strategic about when I bring in testing or those knowledge checks, because if you bring it in too soon, you lose a lot of the folks who still haven't built their confidence in that. And again, that could be a small thing. You know, I do this even myself. I catch myself saying, oh, tell me what you know about RFIs. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, someone who already has been exposed to RFIs can say at least one thing. But if you've never heard the term RFIs before in your absolute life,
mm-hmm.
you've potentially lost that engagement from that learner, because all of a sudden the fear of not knowing or the paralysis of not knowing starts to creep in. And if mm-hmm. that again, that paralysis or that fear hits a tipping point in a learning experience, then that's when distraction just takes over. They're completely gone at that point.
Right.
So I hope I've made sense in describing all these.
Yeah, no, you have. So I've got, you know, some more questions. Who's your audience? Who are you delivering the training to? Are these salespeople? Are these folks that are providing technical support to products? Who are the folks that you're training?
Yeah, for our internal trainings, it's actually open enrollment for everyone in the organization. So mm-hmm. one of our premier programs is our orientation program. So every single person who gets hired at Procore goes through what we call construction boot camp. And mm-hmm. it's a program that I've worked closely to develop, but it was already in some form in existence when I first stepped onto Procore.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's been, I would say, at least 4 years in the development. So we've learned a lot along the way because when you have an audience that is general and in that open enrollment and could cross many sectors and many levels, it's mm-hmm. really challenging. The most successful learning programs are when the audience is very specific and, you know, highly targeted. Not to say that you can't do both, because we've had great feedback with our construction bootcamp. We measure success based on their empathy for the customers, for their content, and how well they feel like they are confident stepping into their role after construction bootcamp. But yeah, it can vary.
So these are folks that are engaging directly with customers in a service or support role, or are they part of the customer acquisition part of your process?
All, yeah.
All of it. Okay.
And even we have software engineers, we have marketing folks, we even put our people org, our HR folks through construction bootcamp. So everyone comes into Procore with the same foundational knowledge of the industry.
So the overall goal is for whoever comes through this program to be able to take probably primarily knowledge and be able to apply it to expressing their understanding of the client's needs or their concerns. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's definitely a part of it. But our mm-hmm. program objectives are even more sort of high level and almost like a half step to what you're saying. So our program objectives are develop a common language for the construction mm-hmm. industry, build empathy for the construction industry or our customers,
mm-hmm.
and also connect to our mission, vision, and values for the company.
Okay.
So we leave some room for, you know, leaders for someone's role to kind of step in, or for instance, sales enablement or mm-hmm. or product team training to fill in from there. That being said, I think it goes to show how committed Procore is to developing a learning environment, because mm-hmm. no matter how much training you do, there's always something new to learn. I think I don't put all the certifications I've done in my life on LinkedIn. It would be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, a lot of folks think, okay, I went through high school, I went through college, I'm done learning, and everything else I'll just kind of make my way through on the job. And
yeah.
that's very true.
Yeah.
And that's a great approach. But what I see being more of the trend is that corporate learning is is, you know, taking advantage again of these transformational programming benefits and really doubling down on how we expand our awareness for our role and our job.
Yeah. We have to talk about, we don't have to, but I'd like to talk about, you mentioned it in passing, talking about your early career, what it was like coming into the construction industry as a woman. As I'm sure you're well aware, that's an active daily topic of conversation. Because again, one thing that all parts of the industry recognize is that there's, if you can't think about it any other way, you got to think about a simple reality, and that is that we do not have an adequate number of individuals coming into the construction industry in any trade. And I consider things even like being an estimator. I call those trades to our industry. So we have that problem. We need to be telling a different story about the construction industry. But one of the things we keep hearing is that, you know, construction ain't for women, you know, because they're not strong enough. You know, they can't do certain things, blah, 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 all these things which are not true. But nonetheless, that's, you know, kind of the blush that my generation puts on it. And I continue to talk about it because I think, along with other people that have a forward vision, that the numbers just are so compelling to say that, you know, over half of the population are female, so they're women. But we have, in the trades, it's somewhere around 3% in the trades. If you add people that are HR, accounting, administrative support, that kind of thing in an office setting, you can bump it up to 6, 7, or 8%, but that's pathetic. And if for no other reason, we need people. There's a huge supply that's been untapped, largely, even though more good things are happening currently. What are your thoughts about when you came and what you see now and how you feel about the future?
Yeah, well, first off, I think the future is bright because the numbers are continuing to grow. And that's where I feel encouraged to share my story. Because I, you know, I remember, I can look back and remember my friends sort of say to me like, Jeanette, I can't believe you're working in construction. What are you doing? and it was both in the positive and negative. You know, they saw me kind of stressed and burnt out and feeling like a fish out of water. But then they also were like, yeah, like, that's really cool. And so I think that, you know, I definitely have that, like, or wear that badge of honor when I talk about my construction experience. But I also feel compelled to, you know, share the cautionary tales of how tough it is just by simply, you know, being a woman in construction. Because I think there's still a lot of work to do. I'm really grateful for my women colleagues who are also sharing their stories and encouraging women. And the word that keeps coming up for me, which I'm going to be honest, is not my favorite word at all, but it's opportunity. There's always been a good amount of opportunity in the construction industry. And I think a lot of folks who have families in the industry or who have kind of had these long histories within the industry know that, maybe don't always share that. So I feel like I'm definitely, you know, sticking my neck out and saying there's opportunity here, because I don't think it in a world where, in an economy perhaps, where scarcity mindset is really plaguing some young folks and of all ages, you know, and across the board, I think it's important to kind of highlight where there is work available and where there is growth available. And I think women bring a lot of skills naturally to the table that also really lifts up the industry. And and I think we're ready to have those conversations to really talk about that more. Because I secretly have this, like, this TED Talk that I want to do. And I say this, you know, facetiously. But it is sort of highlighting, like, the hidden feminine that exists in the industry. Never have I, you know, seen such great examples of camaraderie, collaboration, very much in the weeds, technical kind of analysis. And again, sometimes those aren't perceived as being like feminine traits, but when you kind of see it in motion, like the composure to not flare up about problems. But some of my mentors on the project management side just knew when to kind of take a step back and take all the information in, research and speak to everyone in order to solve a problem and mm-hmm. then, you know, take a step forward with that clarity and with mm-hmm. that knowledge behind them. To me, like, those are skills that my mother taught me. So it is mm-hmm. very much a feminine thing.
No question.
From my perspective, at least.
Yeah. The way you discuss this is a couple of things come to mind. Number one, I agree with everything you've said and how you've said it 100%. The other thing is that if you talk to people individually about whatever the subject is that people have opinions on, and this is a subject that in our industry people have opinions on, I'm not surprised. In fact, it's more pleasing that when you ask I just had another conversation. I did an interview earlier today with a woman who is a director of training and education for one of the building trades unions at a local level. And we talked around this question. Her specific words were slightly different. The sentiment was exactly the same. The tone was exactly the same. So the bottom line is either all of you are saying the wrong things and trying to deceive us, or you're speaking truth. Maybe I'll just underscore one overarching thought. Since I talk about inclusion and social justice, which are related to this, both aspects are related to this, you can use whatever word you want. But the bottom line is, and I know that through your transformational coaching, I'm sure you have an appreciation for this. Number one, every individual you come in contact with in your life is fundamentally another human being. And every other human being that you come in contact with is different than you. So there's no two people alike, but we're all human beings. And at that fundamental level, our starting point should be that if we're going to engage with each other, if we're going to make a connection and engage in whatever setting, particularly in a work setting, our starting point is that I will treat you with respect and I will ask you to do the same for me and we'll go from there. And that's not gender specific. That's not gender identification. It's not religious. It's not political. It's just basic human behavior. Your thoughts. That makes sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. 1,000% makes sense. And, you know, if we could wave a magic wand and kind of impart that in everyone's mind, then I'm not sure what we would be left doing in our day. So I think that's what keeps me going.
Maybe getting along with each other.
Yeah. And maybe doing more art and
right,
building
exactly.
more things.
I would have time to take your yoga class.
Yeah.
You know, and you could teach me meditation because I know that both those things are good for a person and yeah. I don't do either one of them.
Yeah.
So when I talk about things like people's personalities and behavioral styles, you know, I understand a fairly significant amount about that. I understand myself in that context, but I'm always the one that's going to say, my friend Brent Darnell, you should check him out. And, you know, he's a really cool guy. He knows that all this stuff is important, that it's beneficial, that it works, that it leads to better lives and leads to less burnout and all these other kind. And I'm nodding my head like this and say, okay, I agree with you, but why don't I take the next step?
Yeah. Here's what I'd love to say is that I think it's easier than people make it out to be because, you know, and you brought up, you know, the meditation thing. When it comes to, you know, connecting to each individual from a very heart-centered or real place, sometimes that takes time. It takes time to kind of drop in with someone and say, hey, I want to learn very specifically what are you about? What's your story? You know, in the mm-hmm. same kind of care that you take with this podcast, right? And, you know, when you're in a work environment that's obsessed with productivity, you don't mm-hmm. always feel like you have that time. But in reality, 2 minutes
you
doesn't
do.
Take time alone. Yeah, exactly.
I
think we're using the word time in a weird way. Like if you actually slow down, it also slows down our perception of time. And then all of a sudden you have all this time and space mm-hmm. available to you. And it sounds like a trippy thing because again, we get lost in the logic of our words and you have to really feel it to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But the same goes for like any practice, you know, just slow down, take time to really soak it in. And then you find that it really takes no time at all. I used to have a meditation practice where it was maybe 2 hours a day sometimes. Mm-hmm. And now it can be 20 minutes, it can be 5 minutes, and I get just as much because I sort of know the energetic space I want to tap into. I, yeah. you know, I know the sort of vibe that I want to place myself in. And so, you know, I think it's the more we can kind of just allow ourselves that step back and that time. And here's where I'll sort of go back to learning. The more you can just, you know, clear all the distractions and say, hey, I'm going to put my full presence and full attention to whatever it is that I'm curious and wanting to learn, and then commit to creatively making use of it in whatever role I find myself in, you know, then I think you will surprise yourself and be a quote unquote expert in no time at all, and not feel like you're, you know, maybe wasting time with some learning stuff. So get rid of, you know, like the old ways of thinking about old school, because we're definitely in a transformational time right now. And like I said, I think the future is bright.
We'll end on that positive thought. Janine, this has been a joy. First and foremost, it's been interesting. I could talk to you for a lot longer. And so that means sometime months down the road, you may get another email saying, Janine, it's time to come back to the podcast and talk some more.
I would love that.
Yeah, but it's been a delight. Thank you for your time. I'm sure your colleagues at Procar will enjoy hearing you, maybe hearing me a little bit, but it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Yeah, take care. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.